Irvin Podcast. Yeah, it's time for another episode of the MIP. That's the Michael Irvin Podcast, and I am the MVP of the MIP, and I got a great show for you today, a great show. We got it, no big deal, where we'll go around the league and some of the big stories that are going on around the league, and we will discuss that Le'Veon Bell being released by the New York Jets. I will also talk to my coach, the coach that I won championships with on both levels, in college and in the NFL. That's Coach Jimmy Johnson. The man is an incredible man. You want to hear from Coach Jimmy Johnson. And also, at the end of the show, I will give you my playmaker of the week. Take the spotlight sometimes off of all these quarterbacks and put the spotlight on some of those guys that make the quarterbacks what they are. But we have to start this episode with what's dear and near to my heart. And that is what happened with my great friend and the quarterback of my team, the Dallas Cowboys. What happened with Dak Prescott last week in that game? The injury. I just want to share this, you know, and I'm happy I have this forum to discuss and to talk about this and to share it. Because everywhere else I work, you know, you get to talk 3, 4, 5 minute bites here or there, or 30 or 40 seconds at a time. But we really don't get a chance to open up and talk about it. And I know a lot of people who love Dak Prescott, just like I love him, because he's just such a great dude. I'm telling you, if you ever meet him, you walk away loving him. He's that kind of guy. He sees great in everybody and always trying to pull great out of everybody. Always positive. And when I saw him go down, I was crushed. I was crushed. I was hurt. You know, I was hurt watching it because I know what was all on the line. I know him and the situation with his contract. He's been going back and forth with the club for the contract. And the first thing I thought about was, wow, I want him to be okay. And then as soon as they came out, they picked him up, my mind went to his situation. Like, why didn't we get that deal done? Why did that deal not get done? Dak Prescott, fourth round draft pick. And you'll hear me a million times say I measure men in distance travel. For Dak to be a fourth round draft pick, come in, win the starting job, be one of the most winningest quarterbacks in his first 4 or 5 years, you know, up there with Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, he's doing incredible things. And he's been offered $35, $36, $37 million a year. And I know the reports are out there where he wanted 40 and 41. And I'm going to tell you, I hurt for Dak. And then I caught myself getting very angry, not at Dak, but angry at Dak's representatives, the people that represent him. Like, why didn't we get a deal done? This is everybody talks about what Dak's betting on himself. But what happens if there's a catastrophic injury? It shouldn't have come to this. Because now I want Dak to be the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys until he decides to retire from football. Had we had the deal in place, that they would have been forced to wait on Dak. And this is what made me so upset. Your fourth round draft pick, you made maybe a little over $2 million in the first 4 years of your contract, first 4 years. And they're offering you $37 million a year, $36, $37 million a year. Your representatives are telling you, I'm sure we can get 40. Just hold out, hold out. Why? Why? It's not Kirk Cousins. It's not Kirk Cousins. Dak doesn't want to leave Dallas. Why would you want to leave Dallas when you're the quarterback of America's team? And there's so much in that. There's so much in that went to my heart when I saw him down. I don't want Dak to stop being the quarterback of America's team. Think about this, guys, and it's just me. It's just me, and I'm sharing here with you guys. Dak is, Dak, our country is in a tough place. Our country is in a tough place with all the Black Lives Matter and everything and the divisiveness that goes on in our country. Dak is part of all of us. And I say that because he's half black, half white. He's mixed. He's mixed. And having him as the quarterback, and I don't call me ignorant, call me stupid, call me whatever you want. But I'm thinking, wow, in some way, this great dude playing for this great organization, the most well-known organization in the world, he will have influence. And people will see how great of a dude this is and the great things that happen when we come together, when all races come together. Because that's exactly what produced Dak Prescott. And hopefully we start working together better and doing things better, moving forward better. Maybe I'm not a realist in that, but little things like that matter. And then Dak can perform the way he performs on the football field, the type of person he is. I just wanted him here. And I didn't think it was worth another $3 or $4 million a year. Think about that. So if you're talking about $180 or $90 million versus $200 and $210 million, I know it's a lot of money still, but it wasn't worth the risk that they put him through. And I would love for his representatives to say that we want to be here. We should make this deal and get something done right now. Now let's pray that he recovers well and he gets back in great spirits and gets back to being who he is. Dax had a tough 2020. I know you guys know about what happened with his brother. You know, we prayed for him on that. And now he's going through this injury. So we'll certainly pray for him on that. This business is a tough business. I was upset because the Cowboys can't wait. If Andy Dalton steps in and goes on a great run, or if some other quarterback steps in and goes on a great run, then there'll be some hard business decisions that have to be made. And I just didn't want to be in this position. If that contract had gotten signed, then the Dallas Cowboys would have been forced to wait on Dak because they would have given him $130 or $140 million guaranteed. They would have been forced to wait on Dak. I am sorry that this situation has happened. And we just got to pray hard that he recovers and comes back to us real soon. Buddy, we are praying for you, man. We love you. You're the best of the best. Get well and get back soon. Speaking of Dak, Alex Smith returns to the football field after 693 days away for that broken leg that he suffered. And you guys remember that injury, and that was a gruesome injury. And if you don't know much about it, I suggest you go and punch up, go and go watch it, because I watched that Project 11, and they documented his whole situation, the accident, the injury, and then all of his recovery. And I thought, oh my God, this is insane. This is incredible to watch. It really is. What he had to go through to get back on the field, this is absolutely a big deal because it's inspiring so many people and now made even a big deal for me even more because I needed to inspire Dak Prescott. Number 11 coming back on that football field for the Washington football team wasn't about winning the football game because he only went 9 for 17. He only had 37 yards. He got sacked 6 times. The team was sacked 8 times. He was sacked 6 times. But Alex Smith walked off that football field a winner. They had lost the football game, but he had won. He promised his kids he would make it back, and he did. And for those kids to see the fight and the struggle, I think that was an incredible thing for those kids to see their dad go through that fight, go through that struggle, but come out on the other side. And as I watched that game, I watched his wife in the stands, and I want to share with you what I went through watching his wife, because when I had my neck injury in Philadelphia, I must have gone and visited 20 doctors trying to find one that will say, Michael, you could play. And I did find one that said, Michael, you have stenosis. You played your whole career with stenosis. You could play if you really want to. You understand the risk. I came home and tell my family, and my lady looked at me and she said, I know you want to play, baby, but you can't put us through that. You just can't put us through it. I will be sitting in the stands worried about every hit you take. And that's what I saw when I looked at his wife in the stands. I said, oh, that's what my lady was talking about. So my heart goes out to her. I'm sure she's holding her breath with every hit he took. And he took a lot in that first game back. Big deal, Alex Smith. Way to go, buddy. Way to inspire us all. Next story. Big deal, no big deal. The Atlanta Falcons fire head coach Dan Quinn and GM Tom Dimitrioff. Gone after an 0-5 start. Folks, this is no big deal. Let me tell you why. Falcons owner Arthur Blank, you know what he said? It's called lack of winning, period. That's what it is. You know, that's what this league is about. This league is about winning. You lose, you leave. NFL, that's what it stands. You lose, you leave. No big deal. Any other coach out here, you lose, you will leave too. Don't lose, you don't have to leave. No big deal on that. Next story. Raiders win in Kansas City for the first time since 2012. Let me tell you why this is a big deal. Because I watched that game, and most of you, you know you were just like me. You gave the Raiders no chance. Even though the Raiders are showing you how much they admire the Kansas City Chiefs. They tell you the greatest form of flattery is to imitate me. And they are imitating the Chiefs to the core. Hey, Nelson Aguilar, you are my Mecole Hardman. Henry Ruggs, we want you to be our Tyreek Hill. Waller, the tight end, you are Travis Kelce. Why is this a big deal? Because for the first time, Derek Carr out Mahomes, Patrick Mahomes in that game. All of those plays up the field, big plays that we usually see Patrick Mahomes get, Derek Carr was getting them. That's a big deal for many reasons. It shows other teams how to beat the champion, but it also gives the Raiders the confidence that they can beat the champions when they see them again, and they will because they're in the same division. That's a big deal when you knock off the champs. Did you see that NBA Finals game the other day? I was in LA, watched it Friday. I was flying back out of LA on Sunday watching that game. The Lakers, they won the 17th title. LeBron wins his fourth title on his third team. And then LeBron said this.
We just want our respect. Rob wants his respect. Coach Vogel wants his respect. Our organization wants their respect. Laker Nation wants their respect. And I want my damn respect, too.
Let me just tell you, this hits me in a couple of different ways. That's a huge deal. The Lakers tie the Celtics with their 17th title. That's a huge deal. LeBron wins his fourth title with his third team. That's insane. That's insane because that tells me something, man. You know, when you can go from one team to the other, I'll take this group of guys and make them a champion. I'll take that group of guys and make them a champion. I'll take that group of guys and make them a champion. That's incredible, and I'm going to tell you why. You see extraordinarily gifted athletes, a lot of them don't know how to build championships. I always say a lot of times the extraordinarily gifted athlete have to be added to a championship because he doesn't know how to build it. Because to build a championship, since you're playing a team sport, you got to build everybody up. it's not just you. And you've been so extraordinarily gifted that you always felt you didn't need everybody. But LeBron has that unique ability to do it both. He's that extraordinarily gifted athlete, but he's extraordinarily gifted in leadership, in raising guys up, and bringing the best out of those guys. So I was like, oh, my God, this is insane. That is absolutely a big deal. Now LeBron talking about give him his respect, I consider that to be no big deal. Folks, that's what all great athletes do. They find the next fight. How can LeBron say he's not getting any respect? He's a billion-dollar athlete. Anywhere you go, everybody knows LeBron, and they talk about him in the light of, is he one of the greatest? Is he right there with Michael Jordan? Who's the greatest? Greatest between him and Michael Jordan? That's all respect. That's all respect. But I know he has to find that nugget, to find that drive, and he'll say, no, nobody's giving me my respect. That's laughable. No big deal there. But I love the fact that even in his 17th year, he can still find something that brings the best out of him. But trust me, LeBron, get off that social media, because that's what makes you feel like you're not getting your respect. Because everybody gets a chance to talk to you. But trust me, buddy, you're getting your respect because you deserve it. Last story I want to get to. And it's the Le'Veon Bell being released by the New York Jets. To me, this is a big deal. And the other day I was driving somewhere, or being driven somewhere, I should say, and I was thinking about this. And this was before he got cut. I was thinking about Le'Veon Bell. I was thinking about Antonio Brown. And I said, man, I hope this is just a little note to all athletes out there, that the grass isn't always greener on the other side. You know, and can you imagine? Let me tell you, man, I get to walk around Dallas. Emmett, Troy, me, we get to walk around Dallas because we did great things here. We won Super Bowls here. We played together here. And no matter where we go in this city, we are giving love in this city. And Le'Veon and Antonio Brown, along with Ben Roethlisberger, they had that in Pittsburgh. They had that in Pittsburgh. And they could have still been in Pittsburgh right now, leaving their mark, not just for their life or their lifetime, but even when they leave time and go to eternity, people will still be talking about what they did in Pittsburgh together with their families. I hurt for Le'Veon now that he's bouncing from team to team, going from place to place when he had such a great historic franchise that he could have played his whole career with and left a mark like the triplets left here in Dallas. Those triplets could have left there in Pittsburgh. That's a sad deal. It is a big deal. And I hope other young athletes take notice. When you find a good home, a great place, don't let money run you away. Now, let's get to my coach. Talking about a great place and playing for a great coach. Jimmy Johnson, next on the Mike Orvin Podcast. You know, talking to coach reminds me of the time I missed the team charter when we were going to play Detroit in Detroit. And when I was walking up to Coach Johnson, oh, he made me sweat. I was so nervous. I was sweating from head to toe. Just because everyone gets a sweaty crotch or inner thigh chafing doesn't mean you have to go through life with a sweaty crotch or inner thigh chafing. Old Spice has new below deck powder spray to help you feel drier and cleaner down below, and new below deck anti-chafe stick to help prevent inner thigh chafing. Available in the family planning aisle at Walmart or online at Walmart facebook.com/oldspicebelowdeck. Joining me on the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast today, is a man that I admire a great deal. He's a man that many of times I've spoken about and called him a miracle on my journey. And I know I would not be here if it was not for this man that I get to chat with right here today. Let me introduce to you who I will always call my coach, Super Bowl winning in Hall of Fame, NFL Hall of Famer, Coach Jimmy Johnson. Coach, how are you doing, buddy?
Michael, I'm doing great. I just had to cancel a call just a second ago from Worldwide Wes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Wes. Oh, my God. Wes is still going, man. I talk to him every now and then. For everybody out there, Wes is a great dude, man. And Wes has been with us through all of those great years, championship years in Miami. I saw some video the other day, Coach, where they were just showing maybe us on the sideline. And right there, right behind you, was Worldwide Wes.
Oh, yeah. He started out selling shoes, and I put him on the sideline at the University of Miami, and his career took off. Both of my Super Bowl pictures where they're dumping the Gatorade on my head.
Yes.
I look over there, and Wes is right next to me.
That's right. Wes right in that picture. Wes stays around champions, though, Coach, and I noticed this because now he was with us. He was right there with Michael Jordan in the Bulls they went on his run, their run. Right. Every time you saw a picture, there was Wes. I was like, Wes knows everybody. He's a great man. He's a good man, Coach. And that's a good thing that you guys still keep in touch. You know?
Well, he comes down to my fishing tournament. It's actually the richest fishing tournament in the world. We give out over $2 million in prize money. And Wes has come down the last 4 or 5 years. He brought Michael Jordan to fishing at the last 2 years.
Coach, you're living the life down there in the Keys.
I love
it. And so now, even though you gig on Fox, you get to now do it from your house, from your place down there in the Keys?
Yeah, it worked out really well. And Fox people,
you know, I peak now. I'm on air, but especially since I'm home, I got my TV right there on you right there. So I just watch making sure. So I am peaking, Coach.
Yeah, well, Fox was great, though. I called and I said, listen, you know, with all the stuff that's going on, you know, around the country and the way it looks even for the next so many months, I said, I'm not going to get on that plane. And they said, oh, no problem, Coach. You can do it virtual. You know, you do it from the house. They set me up with a camera to put on my boat. And, of course, cameras in my office a whole bit. And they control everything by remote from L.A.
Right.
I walk in my office. They turn on the cameras. They turn on the lights. I talk for a few minutes. And then the show's over with, and I go watch football.
Coach, you've earned that life, though. You've earned that. You know what I mean? You've always said that, man, and I don't mind going back to it. You've always said that, you know, put in the work. The people, don't tell me anything about luck. The things that you've said, Coach, I swear to you to this day, I still eat off all of that. Everything right. You said in those meetings, I still eat off off that today in business and everything.
Well, Michael, thanks to you and, you know, people like Troy and Charles Haley and Russell Maryland, all the whole crew and, you know, the assistant coaches. I was truly blessed to have great people around me my entire career. And in fact, when they met, you know, when they came in, David Baker, for the Hall of Fame thing, I said, you know, my first thought is all the assistant coaches and all the great players that I was around. And they're the ones that took me to the end of this journey. I mean, I'm so appreciative of everybody that I worked with.
Could you remember? I remember when we first came to Miami. And I mean, you know, some of the stuff I remember when we first got to Miami, you know, hey, those are stories I'll let you tell. But I remember we were getting ready. I had heard about when you were at Oklahoma State, and we were getting ready to play Oklahoma. Oklahoma had an advantage over Oklahoma State for a lot of years. I remember walking up to you and saying, Coach, listen, we go get them this time.
I said, "Look, Aaron, we gonna carry a different stick in there this time." You know what I mean?
And you did.
And we did go here. Oh my God, man, we had
some Michael, I've got to tell a story on you though. One of our first little sit downs, and we had a couple. Yeah, we had a couple of sit downs, but most of them were pleasant. But it was my first year.
That's why I call you my miracle coach. That's why I call you my miracle. I know. You could have kicked me out of school. You could have gotten rid of me. Anything, man. Go ahead and tell the story. Go ahead.
Well, one of my coaches came up and he said, "Coach, we got a problem with this young wide receiver we got, Michael Irvin." I said, "Oh, what?" He got into a fight in the chow hall. I said, "Oh, my God." And he was fighting this offensive guard, this 250-pound senior. Okay, you know, have Michael come in my office. You know, we can't have him fighting in the dining hall. And you sit down there and you're all kind of, you know, you're just a young freshman going to the head coach, you know. And I said, "Michael," I said, "what in the world are you getting in a fight in the dining hall?" He said, "Coach, you told me, you said, hey," he cut in front of me on the dining hall, and he says, "just because he's a senior," he said, I've been fighting for chicken my entire life.
My
he said, "I ain't
going
to let anybody jump in front of me."
My whole life, Coach. I remember saying that, Coach. You know, and you know what, Coach? And you said to me, and I had really just lost my father. I'm the 15th of 17 kids coming in this place. I'm thinking, I got to go and make something out of this. And I get in this fight with this dude over food.
People have fallen over last.
Right. I'm walking to the office saying, "Man, I'm going to get kicked out. I just got here. I'm about to get kicked out. I just lost my father. I promised my mom I'm going to make it. I'm going to go to school and make it work." And oh, my God. And I'll never forget, Coach, you didn't kick me out.
But, hey, Michael, I'm no fool. You know, if you couldn't play, I would have kicked you out. I'm no fool.
I take that.
They thought I was going to kick Leon Led off. I'm no fool.
Hey, because I've seen you do it now, Coach. I've seen you, and I feel for the dude because I'm a culprit there. I've come in. We're in Dallas. I come in late for a meeting. We went out the night before, and I think it was James Dixon with me. Oh, my God, man. Oh, you remember you told me? You get in the meeting. You basically told him, "You get your shit and get out."
Everybody, you know, I said, "Listen, I'm going to be very consistent. I'm going to treat every single one of you differently."
You know, yeah, you
that's
did
gonna
say
be consistently. Hey, all this stuff about being fair and equal. Hey, we know things are not fair and equal. You know, and it's not going to be fair and equal here either. You know, my old John Roper, when he fell asleep in a meeting, I cut him.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said, "Well, what would you have done if Troy Aikman been sleeping?" I would have tiptoed back there and I'd have said, "Troy, wake up.
Wake up. Hey, we got a game to win."
The harder you work, the better player you are, the more you meet the rules and regulations. Now, we were disciplined, and as you know, I mean, I didn't put up with any, you know, foolishness. You know, we were disciplined. You know, but, you know, hey, if you were a great player, you had a lot more leeway with me than if you couldn't play.
Coach, what about coaching today? Where would it be more difficult to get that championship? And you got them in both places. You got them in college. You got it in the NFL. And when you look at the landscape of college football and you look at all the stuff that's going on in the NFL, where would it be more difficult to win a championship?
It's more difficult in professional football
because
of parity, because of, you know, if you're in one of the top 10 or 15 colleges in the country, my wife, Rhonda, she could coach Alabama to 10 wins, you know, and I'm not taking anything away from Nick Saban.
Right.
I'm just saying, you know, when we were at Miami, we had so many great players. You know, we were going to win 9 of them, you know, just by because we were just better than they were.
Right.
And that's the way it is in college. You know, those top 10 or 12 schools in college, they've got so much more talent, you know, than a lot of those other schools. Professional football is a different story. If you don't play well on a Sunday, you're going to get beat. If you turn the ball over, you're going to get beat. So I think, you know, it's really the coaching is much more important in professional football than it is in college football. And Michael, you know, people say, well, you can't coach that way nowadays. If you have respect from the players and you have credibility and you know what you're doing, hey, those players are going to play for you.
When you say coach that way, you mean coach so hard you can't coach them as hard, like the kind of hard coaching you did to us?
I think players appreciate that, Michael. They may complain about it, you know, but you know, that's just part of the, you know, part of the deal. They complain about it, but they do it. And when they win, they understand why they did it. People want to be disciplined, you know, and they want to be motivated. You know, they don't want it easy. I mean, when you work hard for something, you appreciate it that much more when you win it.
Coach, now, you know, like, that's what you're describing now is what you were, but it's also, if we bring it current terms, it's what Bill Belichick is. He coaches hard. Now, I know you and Coach Belichick do a lot of teaching, because a lot of conversations and a lot of sharing, and every time I see him on the sideline, I think of you. He reminds me of you. Well, what did you guys start your relationship with?
Well, we made some trades when he was at Cleveland, and you know, that kind of started the relationship. And then actually we ended up at the Kentucky Derby one time together, not even knowing we were going to be there together. And at I hated the Kentucky Derby. There's so much time between races. I was bored to death. And so Bill and I went up, you know, on the rail, and we talked football. And so we were there all day, and we really built up a relationship. And then he started coming down here, and we'd go fishing. But he came down here with an agenda. Every year, you know, like one year he came down, he wanted to talk about drafting players. And he knew our drafts and who we had drafted better than what I remembered. But we went through it, and we talked about all the different scenarios. And he said, hey, I've got a great team. If I use these draft picks, they're not going to be able to make my team. And I said, well, hey, trade some of those, you know, picks for future picks. I said, you can bank them, you know, just, hey, everybody, you know, when the draft comes, everybody's wanting to trade next year's one for year two, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So you don't need to use all those picks this year. And then the next year he came down and wanted to talk about contracts, you know, and we went through all that. And so he's always got an agenda, but we really relate well with one another because we've both been through some of the same things and we coach the same way.
He's coming to get that knowledge, and that's what I like about him. I think he's a phenomenal coach. Coach, and speaking of coaching, Coach, let me take you to the NFL. You saw what happened with Dak Prescott.
Oh.
You know, yeah.
It's sickening. I mean, we were actually on a group chat with all the Fox guys, and all of us just, you know, you hate to see that. I mean, Dak has overcome so much. He's such a good person, and besides being a great player, you just hate to see that. But you know that with the determination that Dak's got, he'll come back. Yeah, he'll be fine. But it ruined this year.
Hey, should he have been on that football field, Coach, without a long term contract? You know, I know people play that business game and everything, and I don't mind telling you. I mean, you can blame Jerry, or I personally got upset at his representatives, like you guys.
Yeah.
You know, let's get a deal done. Stop trying to make it that you got the biggest deal in history. You're worried about the next client. Let's worry about this client. Because, you know, just that was sad to see that happen.
Yeah, because it's going to cost him money. I mean, he's still going to make plenty of money. He's going to be healthy. He's going to still get him a good contract. But I would have loved to have seen him have the contract before this season and had that out of the way.
How far do you think Andy Dalton can take this team, take the Dallas Cowboys?
You know what, Michael, and obviously you're not a better team when you lose a great player. You know?
Right.
You know, so we know that. But Andy Dalton, you know, he went to the playoffs, and he has never been surrounded by the talent that he's surrounded by now. Andy Dalton, I think, will play well. He will manage the game, and he'll get the ball, you know, to the great players. In some ways, it could help some other players. It could help Ezekiel. He will be the bell cow now. It'll help that defense. because they'll be running the ball a lot more now with Ezekiel. Your defense will stay off the field. Give them time to develop and give them time to kind of get into a new scheme. Get Van Der Esch back on defense. So the defense will pick it up, you know, with them running the ball more than what they did in the past.
And that's what I'm worried about. If they somehow find a way to win this weak NFC East right now, then how much does that hurt Dak's ability to get back to where he was and get the positioning and the power and, you know, the leverage he had before?
He's going to be healthy. We know that. Yeah. And, you know, everybody has seen the quality of the play. And so, you know, great quarterbacks are hard to find. You know, there's going to be a market for Dak. You know, obviously Dak would like to stay right there in Dallas. But there'll be bidders out there, you know, for Dak. And so Jerry would just have to come up with the money to match the offers that that are going to come in from other teams. He'll still get a great contract, Michael. I'm really confident that he'll get a great contract.
Coach, how is it that a guy like Le'Veon Bell, we all know the talents that he has. How is it that he is no longer on a football team right now?
Well, yeah, first of all, he lost a lot of money not signing with the Steelers.
With the Steelers, man.
And you know, he was part of a great team. They utilized him extremely well. They knew his talents and how to use him. And then he goes to a bad football team and, you know, and he doesn't help himself with the way he's conducted himself. I don't know Le'Veon Bell, you know, personally, so I really can't say a whole lot, but he's made some bad decisions, I'll say that.
But you had a talent like that. You would make it work somehow, some way.
I would try to make it work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, just like with Charles Haley, you know, when John McVay called me from San Francisco, he said, "We've got a great player here that can't get along with the coaches." He said, "Would you be interested in Charles Haley?" I said, "Yes, I'd be interested. Let me check out a few things." And I had some of you guys, the players, call their players. I had the assistant coaches call their assistant coaches. And everybody said, "Hey, he's a smart player. Obviously, he's a great player. He's got a passion for the game. He just has a problem with authority." And I said, "Well, you know, if a guy's smart and he plays hard and he's passionate, I can deal with that." Now, we had a couple run-ins right there early after he got there. But Charles came into my office and he said, "Coach, I love playing for you." He said, "But if you just wouldn't, you know, criticize me and jump onto me in front of the other players," he said, "if we can do it one-on-one," he said, "hey, I'm great with that." And Charles and I built up a great relationship. Right. And I told him, I said, I can't always guarantee I won't get on your case in front of the other players. But I understand your feelings now. I said, you know, I understand every player is different. You know, I mean, I can cuss Michael, you know, like a sailor. He's just going to respond harder. You know, just go out there and play harder. You know, if I holler at Emmett's going to go into a shell. You know, Emmett's not going to do anything. You know. And I wouldn't dare, you know, holler at Troy, you know. So everyone's different, you know. And so I said, "Charles, I'm fine with that." You know, I said, "From now on, my criticism will come in this office one-on-one, just you and me." And we built up a great relationship. I tried to get the best out of everybody. I told Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett called me when he first got the Cowboy job. He said, "Coach, what kind of advice would you give me?" I said, "Jason," I said, "you know, all these years you've been offensive coordinator and calling plays and X's and O's, and you walk down that hall, nobody cared. Nobody even looked up." I said, "But now you're the man. When you walk down that hall, every head's going to turn. You're going to say, oh, there's the head coach, the leader. You're the leader of that team. And if you're going to be the best that they can be, you need to get the best out of all those people, that secretary, mm-hmm. that intern, that backup offensive guard, you know, that practice squad player." And I said, "You know how you do it? give them some attention. No one likes to be ignored. And especially, no one likes to be ignored by the leader. And I said, so if you'll just have some interaction, it doesn't have to be a rah-rah praise. Sometimes you get on a case, hey, I expect something better tomorrow. You know, or it may be, hey, oh, hey, you look nice today. Hey, you know, just acknowledge them. And if you can get the best out of all those people in that organization, hey, there's no telling how far you can go. I said, but it's a different world. It's not X's and O's now. It's interaction and communication with people.
And that's where coaches fall short. Some coach, in my opinion, that's what some folks, they understand the game of football great. And that's why I asked you about Le'Veon Bell, but they don't understand people. And you understood people. Coach, you know, all that I do today, you know, we had those meetings we used to have, those Thursday night meetings, remember, in college.
Oh, yeah.
You bring us in there. You gave us a Big Mac or a Whopper. We get a burger. Everybody came for them Big Macs and Whoppers.
That was to keep you off the street.
Right. That was to keep us off the street. Right. But one of the things you always ask, and you made us come up with something, what are you going to be doing when you leave here? And you know, then you'll say, I know everybody going to say they're going to go to the NFL, but I'm talking about after that. I'm talking about after that. What are you going to be doing after that? And you started making us, as 18, 19-year-old kids, think about those things. And that was leadership. And I'm telling you everything I think about that.
Yeah, I think those meetings were great for us, Michael. And like I said, it was a multi-purpose deal. You know, usually, you know, of course, the players were in the hotel the night before the game. We had curfew.
Right.
Two nights before the game, that was when that was their night to go out on the town and scream and holler. I knew if I could get them there at 10 o'clock at night and fill their stomach up with food, you know, then they more likely they're going to go home after that. You know, but it gave me an opportunity to talk to them and to bond, you know, and to hear, you know, the players hear another player say, well, you know, if I can't play professional football, my grandfather's got a nursery business. I'd like to go in and do that. You know, well, okay. Well, are you taking some business classes? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? And to hear, you know, you get to know each other that much more rather than X's and O's football. And that's why I said, when those meetings, I said, we're not going to talk football. You know, we're going to talk about your life. You know, we're going to talk about, hey, how can you improve yourself? You know, what are you going to do 10 years from now? And I thought it was great meetings for us just to come together, and that we're just people trying to do our best.
But I think that's what separates the good from the great, especially when you're dealing with people like you're dealing with people. Coach, speaking of people, we are all of us, as people were talking about, that Tom Brady heading to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Coach, what do you think of what is happening, or that whole evolution? Tom going to Tampa Bay and where Tampa is right now?
I think Tampa's just going to get better and better because they got some great players.
Me too, coach. Me too.
I like them. Now, sometimes I'd like to see them have a little bit more attention to detail. Sometimes they're a loose operation, you know. But they got some great players. They've got some outstanding coaches. I'll tell you what, defensively, they're really good. I think, you know, they're just going to get better and better and better. You know, and Tom doesn't have to carry the team. You know, the defense can carry the team. Those receivers are really, really good. And so they're a talented bunch. And it's going to be interesting. You know, we talked about Dallas earlier on. But, you know, all of these teams, we have a lot of football left to be played. And a lot of crazy things are happening nowadays. You know, as far as players missing games, practices, et cetera, et cetera. This is going to be a crazy season, you know, but if you can keep it together and be disciplined off the field and stay healthy, hey, anything can happen by the end of this year. Just like we said, you know, Dallas should win the NFC East without question. And how good are they going to be when it comes playoff time? And so, hey, they may be real, real good. You know, Tampa's could be good right now, and they could be great by the time we get to the playoffs. A lot of things can happen between now and then.
And then that if something can happen to anyone, and if it's the wrong one, like you said, with this COVID and everything, oh, my God. That's why they have to do something for a playoff score. They got to make sure if we can get to the playoffs that we got to – I don't know how they could do it, but figure out a way to make sure. We, yeah, I've been talking about that, and I've heard people say, oh, no, they can't do that. No, yes, you can. You can put them in a bubble.
for the playoffs, put them in a bubble. Because you would hate to have a great team, you know, here maybe win the first couple of rounds and get ready for the Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden they're starting running back and quarterback are out because of COVID-19. For the playoffs, you can't do it now. There's too many people involved. But for the playoffs, it'd be great to have a bubble.
Coach, the game is so much passing now. You loved running the football. You thought it was about being tough, running the football.
Right.
We, you know, I can tell people, we used to have two practices a day. I mean, full passing. It was going to be some hitting in those practices. We were going to hit in those practices. You know what I'm saying? Listen, I'm not going to have you miss a play because your fingernail hurts. We're going to get some hitting in right here and get in those games. Coach, what do you see when you see the game that is so much passing? Do you think they've gotten away from the best part of it, which is running the football?
No, I think the rules are such now that it really benefits the team that throws the football and throws it well. Yeah. But I think you still have to be a physical football team. And I think there are times that you still need to run the football. They said something the other day about, quarterbacks and, I said, with Troy and Michael and Harper and Novacek, we could have thrown it every down and we would have set records. I said, points and scoring come from the passing game. But also with the passing game, risk come, interceptions, sacks, fumbles. I said, the safest way for us to win, we didn't need to set records. I want to win games. The safest way for us to win was to have balance. And by having balance, we were able to protect the football. That's one reason, Troy never had he doesn't have a large number of comebacks. We didn't have to come back because we never got in trouble in the first place. If you don't turn the ball over and if you don't make mistakes early, you don't have to have a big comeback. You just get the lead and hold on to it. A balance was what was important to us. And so running the football and being physical, I think by running the football and being physical, it helps your defense. It helps you, in times, bad weather, late in the season, cold, et cetera, et cetera. So I would still be wide open throwing the football more so than we ever did, but we would still be a tough, physical running football team.
Because the rules allow you to, you say the rules – project that you got to take advantage of those rules in today's NFL, which makes me mad sometimes because they were hitting me. But that bang eight route, boom, boom, that was it. I had to catch that ball amongst pain. Now, it's like, you can't touch that guy. Wait till he come down. He's a defenseless receiver. Like, come on, man.
Michael, that's for sure. That's why we always threw you the slant. We would never throw that quick post to Alvin Harper now.
I got
to
take this hit.
Get those alligator arms.
I got to take this hit. It was serious business, man. It was serious business. Coach, I'm telling you, Coach. Coach, you're going in the Hall of Fame, Coach. It's that moment, and I hope we'll get a chance to have that ceremony because we got robbed of the ceremony this year, so hopefully we'll get a chance to have it. Coming up, Coach, what is that going to be like for you? What is that moment going to be like?
Well, obviously, it's something really special. But I think more than being special for me, I think it's special for all the people that I associated with. I said it earlier on. All those assistant coaches. I coached at like 13 different places. Going up the ladder. All of those people, all those players that played for me, because I know why I'm going into the Hall of Fame. I know why I went in the Hall of Fame with the College Hall of Fame, because, hey, I had great college players. I know why I'm going into the Hall of Fame, with with professional football because of the players and the coaches. I know why I went into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame, because of Fox NFL Sunday and because of those guys, you know, the people on our set. So I understand why I received that award. It's because of all the people that I was associated with.
You've been blessed, Coach. God has been good.
Every day I'm blessed, Michael.
You're sitting down there on a boat. You got championships everywhere. Coach, how did you never come back to coaching? Like, I mean, you had opportunities.
Yeah, Michael, the most important thing for me is to be happy with what I'm doing. I could have stayed at University of Miami and we could have won championship after championship. There's no doubt in my mind. I could have stayed with the Dallas Cowboys and we would have won more championships.
I think about it every day, man, especially now.
Well, you know, Troy came to my, you know, it was like 10 years later and he came to the house and we were having dinner and he started talking about it and I could see the emotion, how upset he was that I left. And I mean, the way I looked at it, I left the Cowboys. I left you guys in great shape. I left you with a great team. I left you with an entire coaching staff, you know, but I've always done stuff to make me happy. You know, once I accomplished something, at University of Miami, I wanted the challenge to go to professional football. And once I accomplished winning back-to-back Super Bowls, I wanted to come live in South Florida. I wanted to live in the Florida Keys. And then, you know, I gave it a try, you know, back with the Miami Dolphins, and we went to playoffs 3 straight years, won a couple of playoff games. But then I had some family problems in that, you know, my family, my son, he had problems. My mother died. And I said, you know, I've been doing all this all my life, and I think it's time for me to walk away and start spending time with my family. I am so close with my sons and my daughter-in-laws now and my wife, Rhonda. I mean, it's a great, great time for me right now, Michael. I've always done stuff to make me happy. But every place I've ever left, you know, I left Oklahoma State. Pat Jones won 11 games. Got, you know, Thurman Thomas, who I recruited, and, you know, Barry Sanders, and, you know, had a great career. I left University of Miami. I left them in great shape. They won championships. I left Cowboys. They won championships. So I never walked away from a place and left them bare. You know, they were always pretty good when I left them.
Coach, you could have had one of those dynasties here, like Bill Belichick had in New England, if you had stayed. I really believe we would have been up in there just like that, just what they've done in New England.
There's no doubt in my mind, because you know I was going to get talent.
Right.
I was going to bring players in.
Right.
I never stopped searching for players, and you knew we were going to be disciplined, and we were going to do it the right way. I mean, so I understand that, and just like that night where I had dinner with Troy, when I saw the emotion that he had, geez. I think those guys were mad at me for leaving.
Coach, I'm telling you, Coach, we talk about it all the time, too. And you know what? I think it is. It has something to do with what everybody else has accomplished. And then people start looking back and say, oh, and then you're like, wait a minute. We really could have done more. We would have stayed together, too. Like everybody else stayed together. We would have done more. We could have had that. It is amazing that we still think about it, Coach. But we understand. Just like you told me then, you say, hey, you know, business is business, and we all have to do some business. I remember when I was trying to get a contract, you said, we all got to do business. That's just the business of this business. So I'm with you. Do what you got to do.
Mike, I will tell you, I never tell you this before. You know, when you were going to hold out that first year or so, and they said, hey, you know, Coach, you know, you think Michael's going to hold out? I said, please. I coached Michael in college. He's not going to hold out. It's coming up time for the first game. What? Where's Michael? He's holding out. What do you mean he's holding out? I coached him. I'm his guy. You know, professional football, though, those agents get involved. They say, oh, you're going to get more money. You're not going back in. You disappointed me. I thought our relationship, you'd come back. Forget about the money.
It's true. That's why I said it gets funny when the representatives get in there, because they start telling you things. I'm not telling you something I heard. I'm telling you what I know. I wanted to go play football. No, you can't. We got to do this. We got to do this. You know? So I was like, man. And I was like, I know they know. They know. It's not like I got other interests. I want to go play football.
Oh, I football sure.
So yeah, I didn't know it. It was funny. It was the business of business, Coach. Coach, thanks for taking the time, man, chatting with me.
Oh, Michael, it's been fun, you know, telling the old stories, and you know how much I love you.
Yeah, and I love you too, Coach. And tell Ron to tell everybody I said hello. Coach, I really do. I mean that. You know, it wasn't just that fight that I got into that day. You know, I got into other fights with other players, and I just appreciate that you said it to me. And remember, I had just lost my father. You said, son, I know you just lost your father, son.
Yeah.
He said, I talked to your coach. He said, I want you to know. He said, I want you to know I'm going to be here now, but we can't be fighting. We can't fight teammates. We can't fight each other. I'm going to be here for you. I'm not going to leave, but we can't be fighting each other. You understand? You know what I mean? I guess I was just scrapping, trying to find my place in life, man. And I appreciate that guidance, buddy. I really do.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Hey, it's been special time. Hey, yeah, anything, man, I can do for you, you know I'm here for you.
I appreciate you, Coach. I love you, buddy.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Coach. Hey, that was great talking with Coach Johnson. It's always great talking with my coach. But now let's get to my playmaker of the week. And I want to start this thing with, and you guys, I tell you now, playmakers, you got to win to get in. But there are a couple situations that makes me take notice even when you don't win. And there's a couple guys that are making me take notice even though they did not win. That young quarterback with the Chargers, Justin Herbert, let me tell you about this. This kid is incredible. Now, back to back, he played Tampa Bay Buccaneers and then the New Orleans Saints. Two GOATs. He plays Tom Brady and Drew Brees. Tom Brady, he throws 290 yards and 3 TDs. Should have won that game. Against Drew Brees, he threw for 264 yards, 4 TDs. Should have won that game. Justin Herbert, when you had Brady on the ropes, your defense let you down. They lost that game. And then when you had Drew Brees beat your kicker, he couldn't make the field goal, and you lost that game. But you won't lose here, buddy. I got you in my honorable mention of my playmakers of the week. Watch that young guy. Watch him. He's going to be one of the great ones. Another guy I want to talk about is Travis Fulgham. Travis Fulgham. Let me give you, how many times you'll hear me say it all the time? I measure many distance travel. Travis, August 9th, cut by the Lions. August 10th, claimed by the Packers. August 19th, cut by the Packers. August 20th, claimed by the Eagles. October 4th, catches game-winning TD versus the 49ers. After all of this, cut, be released, come on back, cut. He was playing basketball in the NFL, bouncing around from team to team. And then October 4th, he catches a game-winning TD. And then last week, he comes out, 10 catches, 152 yards, and 1 TD. That is some distance travel, and you need to be mentioned with these playmakers. That's why I am mentioning you. But my playmaker of the week is that young receiver in Pittsburgh, Chase Claypool. I watched this kid. 7 receptions, 110 yards, 3 receiving TDs, and then 1 rush TD. 4 TDs in 1 game. And if you remember, or you watched over the years, you've watched the receivers that Pittsburgh has had. Mike Wallace, you know, Emmanuel Sanders, the Juju Smith-Schusters, all great receivers, but more small guys. Ben Roethlisberger haven't had a guy 6'4",
like Claypool since he had Plexico Burris. And now he has Claypool to go with Juju Smith-Schuster and all those other guys he have. I'm telling you right now, look out for the Pittsburgh Steelers and look out because they have my playmaker of the week, Chase Claypool. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep being a playmaker.
Thanks for downloading the MIP. Check out new episodes of the Michael Irvin Podcast every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.